Welcome to In the Sports Booth. Victor Corona, Moises Linares here on this Labor Day weekend. How you doing, Victor?
I'm doing good, man. It's good to be here on this holiday.
Great long weekend. You know, it's hot outside. You have Monday. Everybody's going to be doing something except us. We got to work.
Right.
We're here grinding these sports news, letting everybody out there know what's going on in the world of sports. And as you mentioned earlier to me, off the air, the last weekend of no football.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
This is the last week for 3 straight months of Sunday NFL football. Actually, 4 months. So this is the... So
that's the equivalent of a lot of beer,
yes,
a lot of pizza, a lot of men gaining a lot of weight.
Yes, and a lot of fantasy football. So if
you're... Oh, man. I'm not a fantasy guy, but I've been hearing that for the past about 8 weeks.
Right.
Preparing... It's draft. You have a draft.
Right.
The thing about fantasy that I don't like is that you start rooting for the guys that you don't like because you have them in your team. So that kind of ruins it for me. So I kind of stay away from that. I think you do have a fantasy team, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. We just did our draft last week. So, you know, I'm pretty psyched about the season.
You know what's been going on? Something that we thought was not going to happen. We said it. We thought that by now we would have... the ref issue resolved, and up to this point, it's a problem. There's not going to be refs on the first game, and this is simply terrible news for everybody.
Yeah, and you know it's gonna affect everybody. I mean, from the top to the bottom, you're looking at teams, you're looking at fans, you're looking at. I mean, it's just, you know, if something goes bad, like we talked about with Ruben last week, it's going to be a disaster, and that's what we're you know, looking at right now with this problem. And man, I was hoping, you know, they met this weekend, you know, at the last minute trying to, you know, get something resolved, and it didn't come
true.
I guess
we're asking the question, what is it going to take to get this fixed, because it's just moving very slow.
Right.
And at the beginning, I don't believe anybody imagined that it would have the ripple effect that it's had now. And we have replacement officials very capable but lacking in experience in such big games. And we see it now with all the bad calls, the mistakes. And you can't really blame them because they're replacement officials for a reason. So we start wondering, what's going to happen? John Clayton from ESPN had something to say. Let's listen in and see what he had to say about the problem and the issue going on.
Time ran out as far as getting anything done with the current group of officials, so now it's official. The league is confirming that they are going to start the regular season with replacement officials, and that means it probably could go a couple weeks into the season, but at least for the first week, knowing that they start the season on Wednesday, there is no way they could probably get a deal done, get the crews ready for the first game, and so because of that, and because there doesn't seem to be any progress in any negotiations, it's replacement officials, and now that is official.
The officials calls...
Okay, what's going to happen when you have a game that's very close? One of those two-point games, a field goal game, and you have a bad call. What do you do now? Yeah, that could be the difference between getting into the playoffs and staying out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, imagine someone's fighting for a wild card or a division and, you know, and something, you know, you don't get in because of a bad call or something like that. And when you could have fixed the problem, you know, one of the things that, you know, I said last week was, you know, we demand better, you know, like the NFL is a $9 billion, you know, league. They're making that much money. I mean, come on.
The league,
you know,
is a well-organized league. When we talk about leagues in the United States, you talk about the NFL and how organized it is and how they were able to resolve previous problems with the players. And they came into an agreement, and now they can agree to get perhaps one of the most important pieces in a football game or in any kind of sports. You need good refs. You need quality. And if you don't have it, you are going to have a problem. And this is the case. A few weeks, it's too much time. If you tell me 1 or 2 games, I could make an acceptance for that. But when you're saying a few weeks into the season, that could screw several teams over. And I don't think at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of people that are not happy.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be tough for some you know, teams and players to be able to look them and look at the referee, you know, and be like, you know what? He made a good call. They're going to be those replacement players.
There's going to be a lot of challenges, I'll tell you
right.
that.
Right. And, you know, and you only have three challenges. You're going to be wasting a lot of
timeouts. You're going to be bringing a lot of timeouts when you lose a challenge on a bad call. And there, that's a consequence that this has brought upon the NFL.
Yeah. And you know what? It's just, you know, you start to think about the product. You start to think about the brand at the NFL. You know, they're always talking about, you know, Roger Goodell is always talking about keeping players healthy and also about, you know, protecting the shield. And those kind of things, something like this could mess it up for you. It's just, you know, you're asking for trouble, I think. And
another expert in the league, Adam Schefter, also, you know, said what he thought this is doing to the season up to this point.
These officials' calls are going to decide games, and games decide divisions, and divisions decide playoff spots, and playoff spots decide coaches' futures. And so, not to make this too extreme, but there are head coaches and their staffs who conceivably could lose their jobs at the end of the year on the basis of some calls that decide some games during the regular season from these replacement refs. That's the last thing that anybody wants to see at this point in time. And then there's the other side that one NFL executive raised a short time ago to me, where he said, look, let's be honest here. Officials, whoever's working, always miss calls, and we're always going to complain about whatever calls they make. But clearly, the replacement refs right now are overmatched.
That's exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Basically summed it up right there.
Right.
It is a concern that is going to have a long-term effect. And we're probably going to, if this in any way hurts any coach or any team getting from one place to the next during the season, it's going to be talked about for a long time.
Yeah, especially imagine if you're let's go to that first game between the Giants and the Cowboys, right?
Which always starts, close games, yeah. Always very competitive games.
Right, and you lose it. Like, Cowboy Nation is big here. You know, they're America's team. Let's say they lose by a field goal or something, and then later on in the season, they're trying to battle for a playoff spot, and they don't get in. You think Jerry Jones is not going to make a big deal out of it?
He'll definitely make a big deal, and you know that he has a lot of power when it comes to making some kind of PR campaign in any subject that he wishes to really get out there.
Right.
So it could be an issue. Let's see what John Clayton said after, and we'll move on after that.
Well, the best case scenario now is it's 2 or 3 weeks of regular season games. You can't now put the genie back in the bottle. They are going to start the season, and there still needs to be a timetable to get a deal done with the officials getting back on the field. So the best case scenario is 2 or 3 weeks. The worst case scenario is going to be the entire season. I don't anticipate that happening, but I guess the best case could be to get it done in 2 or 3 weeks.
There you go. There you have it. 2 or 3 weeks. It might cost fans a lot of rage and anger. It's going to cost a lot of happiness. People, this is going to be the difference between being happy a weekend and being unhappy. Especially when you're questioning, wait, did we lose the game because of that play? Because it was a bad call? Because the ref did not see this, you know, pass interference or false start or anything? Small things. It might be small. It might sound small. But in the field, it does have a bigger impact.
Yeah, and then the other thing to keep in mind, too, when you're watching the games, don't you think you're going to be always looking at the referees? Like, you're going to be, like, there, and you're going to, you know, you're trying to watch the
game.
It's
going to put extra pressure on the referees.
Right.
And a lot of people, that was one of the things that was not mentioned. You just nailed it right there. The fact that whenever you see a questionable play, everybody's going to look at the ref and say, wait, are you going to call that or are you not?
Right.
And as the game progresses, that's going to create more pressure, which is going to build onto the next game and onto the next game. And hopefully we do not get to that point, because everybody's been waiting for football season. Everybody's been waiting for the NFL. And that's the last thing that we would like to see. You're listening to In the Sports Booth, www.skrillstudios.com. Victor Corona and Moises Linares here. You know what? I was telling you about this. Somebody came out and said, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah, and it was the owner. He actually was quoted this week. He was they came up to him and asked him about the whole comparison thing. So he got his little he got to, you know, make a quote there. He said, quote, "I think that Tommy, with all due respect, is better than Joe Montana. I know that's a leap, but I really think he might already be the best of all time. I watch how involved he is, how driven he is. He's like Belichick. He's into the details. He's got a skill that makes him so special. He can process all of it so quickly, and then he's just got it, that quality. Certain people have that sincerity. He's a very genuine guy. People can relate to him. People can trust him.
Wow. That's, it's like saying Kobe Bryant is better than Michael Jordan. You know, you start thinking like that. I'm not going to deny that Tom Brady is a great quarterback, a legend quarterback. He has the Super Bowls. He has the MVPs. He hasn't had great teams, and he's led those teams to do legendary things. Three titles in a row, and you start thinking, you know, he's up there. But is he better than the greatest guy, the guy who's considered the greatest? I mean, to a lot of people, because other people have. Who do you have as number one all time?
Well, for me personally, it's John Elway. I mean, I grew up watching that guy, you know, and he was great. I mean, he took the Broncos when they were really bad. He pretty much carried them to two Super Bowls where they got blown out. And then later on in his career, he came back. And I think the one thing I loved about him was the fact that he can throw and he can run. But, you know, we're talking about the comparison right now between Tom Brady and John Montana. And you know what? Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, he might have an argument here. Because if we start looking at the stats, Brady pretty much hasn't been after 12 seasons so far. So if we're looking at stats, you know, we start looking after 12 seasons. You got Brady with almost 40,000 yards to Montana's 35. You got Brady with 300 touchdowns and 115 interceptions to Montana's 242 to 123. So even the win-loss record, Brady has 124 with 35 losses.
I see what you mean.
So, I mean, the argument is there. It's just all up to you. And I
would like to hear what people have to say. If you want to talk about this topic, 1-800-893-9562. Who do you think is the best quarterback of all time? Tom Brady, obviously, is going to be in the argument. You also have Peyton Manning.
Right.
Perhaps the two greatest quarterbacks of our generation.
Right.
These guys go head to head. The difference being that Brady has more Super Bowls.
Right.
Yet Peyton Manning has a different role in every team he's played, or in the teams he's played in, which is running offense. And you see the effect that he has once he's left. Yeah, you could say that the team was built around Peyton, but the guy's a genius, and every expert out there will tell you that you could make an argument that he also could be in the run for one, two, or three of all time.
Right. I mean, and you look at some of the other quarterbacks, and I think we can make a good argument for any of the, I mean, Dan Marino, you know, he's another guy. You know, the only thing that would hold him back is the fact that he never won a Super Bowl. So, but he's got the numbers. We got Brett Favre too in there. You know, he won a Super Bowl. So he has a lot of the passing records now, you know? And so you know what? You can go with anybody at this point. You know, it's just it's the argument right now. And you know, if people want to call in and say who they got, hey, we welcome it.
One of the good things that's happened is that Maurice Jones-Drew has ended his holdout after 38 days. He's back in camp. We don't know how much he's gonna play. We know that he didn't have the playbook, which definitely means that he's not up to date on what's going on, but he is a veteran. He's been in the league for about 7 years, so he knows how to catch up quick. Is he going to make a difference? What do you see happening?
Well, in terms of a difference, you know what? The only important for that this news is important for, believe it or not, is fantasy owners.
Fantasy.
That's about it.
Here
because,
we go. Fantasy
yeah,
again.
I hate to say it, but, you know, like, honestly, nobody has the Jaguars winning that division.
But this guy led the NFL. He's a leading rusher.
Right.
That should make some kind of a difference.
Right, but in terms of leading his team to the playoffs, I just don't see it. Well, not in that division, not with the Texans there.
We can't have one player, you know, we can't depend on this guy to carry the whole team, you know. He needs more than just, they need more than just a running back to get into the playoffs. This team, the least popular team in the NFL, it's very hard to say that you could do more. the right. If they're probably even on the map, if they're even being noticed, it's because the numbers this guy is putting are monster, you know, are monster numbers.
Yeah, but they're just numbers, you know. Like, you need Blaine Gabbert to step up for
so
that.
You don't
team.
Think he deserves the money that he's asking for?
Oh, he deserves whatever he can get at this point, you know. With the NFL, you know, those contracts are not guaranteed. You can get hurt tomorrow and be done, you know. Nobody's gonna care about you anymore. So if he can get the money, you know, all power to him. But the thing is that the running back position has diminished of how important it is nowadays.
You have,
you know,
a lot of alpha dogs, and every running back wants to make the most money. You want to be the guy making the most money. Adrian Peterson,
right?
Great running back, injury prone.
And then you got Chris Johnson too. He got the big contract and he got hurt. I mean, so, you know, this is where, you know, a team has to be careful, you know.
And we saw the owner said, get on the bus. According to some of the sources, that's one of the reasons why Maurice Jones-Drew was so upset.
Right.
That he feels that the team does not want him as much as he thought they did. The fact that he's replaceable. And nowadays, any player is replaceable.
Well, it's not about... The problem is that position, you know, he has no leverage at this point, you know, for him to hold out. It's not like the team's going to be like, you know, yeah, he contributed the majority of the offense for them. But at some point, you just got to say, look, if we pay you, what's going to happen to the team? Are we going to, you know, especially with him holding out, are you going to be a good player this year? And history has shown us that if you hold out, at some point you're going to get hurt during that season. So, you know, he's taking a risk, because now with him holding out, you know, and not getting the money, it might not work out for him.
Changing the topic a little bit, let's talk a little bit about soccer. I'm going to move it up this time. This week is going to go up because
I've left it out so much.
People, my own friends listening are asking me, what's going on with you, man?
Yeah.
Did you all of a sudden forget about soccer? Does it not matter? I heard this guy, very famous guy.
Right.
A guy that I admire, a guy that I look up to, Max Kellerman.
Right.
All due respect to the guy. I think he's one of the best radio hosts out there. He said, nobody cares about soccer in L.A. That's what he came. I've heard him say that a few times. It's not the first time I hear it from him. I follow the guy. I listen to the guy.
Right.
I think he's a great sports guy. I'm not gonna lie. He's a great boxing analyst as well. But I did feel kind of offended.
Right.
Nobody cares about soccer in LA. I disagree with that.
I think part of the reason, or I think we need to go a little bit, going back to why he said that, and it was because they were trying to figure out who the
top sport is in LA?
No, the top athletes, like the most famous ones here in LA. And so while they were having their argument or their debate, Beckham kept coming up because of the star power that he has.
Yeah, he's a star power.
Right.
But the thing, the issue is that people like Max Kellerman think that soccer is an inferior sport. Inferior sport to other sports. And for me, I respect every sport. If you love baseball, great. If you love football, great. You know, every sport is different. But when you personally know that my sport is soccer.
Right.
I'm very objective. But yet, if you want to see how important soccer is, you take a drive down L.A. And I mean, any street in L.A. and you're going to see countless number of parks and fields, and you're going to see countless number of people playing soccer. It's not because it's cheap, because a lot of people say, oh, it's the most affordable sport to put your kids in. No, it's not that.
Hey,
you know, it's a sport that, you know, you grow up with. You learn to love, just like some people learn how to love other sports as football and baseball.
Yeah, and to Max's point, though, too, I mean, I think about this, though. Like, and I, you know what, I see your point, too, but let's keep this in mind, too. What happens, though, like, most of these kids, you know, like, the moms and dads, they put their kids into soccer. But then what happens, you know, what happens after high school, though? What, you know, well, how come they're not being developed? I think part of the reason, though, that what happens here is that a lot of them end up choosing the more popular sport, like football and baseball and basketball. And I think that's where you have a big problem here in LA and also in the United States. I think most of them are going where the money is at.
I mean, when you talk about leagues in the country, obviously soccer is not one of the best paid. MLS is not one of the best paid leagues, and that's obvious. Yet, out in the world, there's more money. Your goal is always going to be to go out, because this is a developing league. It's growing. And the thing about soccer is that, you know, you learn how to love it from being a kid. You can't, it's harder to put an older kid, 12, 13 years old, to play the sport, because it's harder to develop, as in football or basketball, where you have all these kids that get to middle school and they start playing the sport for the first time because physically they're gifted that way. Soccer takes more you have to be very technical with your feet, and it's not easy dribbling the ball, let me tell you that much. I mean, for me, if you have the physical ability and the physical body to run with a football, that's probably an easier job than, you know, dribbling the ball past three players. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, in my opinion, this is my opinion.
Right.
One of the reasons why soccer is not popular in the United States, it's because we live in a country where we're number one at everything we do. We're the number one country in football. It's not, that's not argued. We're probably one or two in baseball. Some of the best players in baseball come from this country. We're the number one country in basketball. If we were the number one country in soccer, this sport would be definitely among the one, two, or three sports in this country. And we see that when, perfect example, the World Cup. Everybody saw the United States rally and almost make it to the next step. And you saw the whole country come together and saying, wow, you know, we're actually not that bad. But once they lost, okay, you know, you suck. Bring on football.
Well, yeah, I mean, and to your point, I mean, you talked about how you're talking about globally. I think the other problem, too, is the fact that the number one league is not here.
No, it's not. I find that, I mean, one day it might compete, but it's harder. The thing is that Europe has so many good leagues. There's arguments of which league is the best, because it changes in European countries every year. And hopefully this league grows one day for the good of the country and the kids that love the sport, like, and people like myself that love it. I hope that it does grow one day, but you need more money to be invested. And when you have salary caps and, you know, a ceiling of how much money you can spend, it's going to be hard.
I think the other problem, too, is and I see it, because I have a lot of friends like yourself that get up, you know, having to get up at 4 a.m. to watch a game on a Saturday Sunday, you know.
Yes.
I think the time difference also, you know, like this morning, you know, I was, you know, seeing all the posts about Arsenal and Manchester United. and so
you have hardcore fans. And
right.
They're not, people say, oh, nobody cares, you know, but there is
right.
There's this culture that's not, you know, you don't give it a lot of attention. People are not paying attention to this soccer culture, but it's there, you know, it's underground. It's right there, and it's not small. It's huge. And all these pubs you see around, all these English pubs, always have soccer matches, always have games, have people. Sometimes you'll go there at 4 a.m. and you see a pub full of people watching the game, rooting for their team. And today they had to see Robin Van Persie scored 3 goals, hat trick for Man U, which kind of brought me the question: does it hurt Arsenal fans?
You know what? We talked about this this morning.
Talking about the English Premier League. In case you're listening, does it hurt? I mean, it's like you brought that point. I thought it was a great point. Transfer right. Matt Kemp.
Right. Yeah, trading him to the Giants and him hitting 3 home runs. So. You know, it is. I mean, I'm sorry, but if a fan from Arsenal tells you that doesn't hurt, it does. I mean, you know, to have your best player go to your rival team and him, you know, have success, you're going to be, you know, like, you know, I've seen, you know, on some of the teams I follow, you know, see the player leave. You know, the perfect example is Mike Piazza when he was traded from the Dodgers to the Marlins and then he went to the Mets. I was mad.
Yeah, I was mad. And the MLS is trying to do this thing where they're trying to breed this thing, you know, this kind of like soccer culture and religion. But when you talk about rivalries, and you hear this all the time, Lakers-Celtics, one of the greatest rivalries, Well, if you think that's a great rivalry, and if you follow basketball, and if you really want to see a rivalry to the next level, I invite you to see a Barcelona versus Real Madrid game. And that's a worldwide rivalry. And you have fans, you have Laker fans. You have more Laker fans in the world than you do Celtic fans. And that's a fact.
Right, yeah.
But you have Barcelona and Real Madrid fans all over the world, almost evenly split, where you see 2 Madrid fans, you're going to see 2 Barcelona fans nowadays. And you saw them playing this week. And the fact that the games are easier to watch nowadays, and the fact that the U.S. has the rights to some of these games, makes it easier to see the rivalry and how much people follow it. I'm sure you saw on your Facebook feed, on your Twitter feed, trending topics, Barcelona, Real Madrid, because it's that big.
Well, yeah, no, and that I'm not going to disagree with you, because, I mean, on Twitter, the two most popular guys on Twitter who have the most followers, even on Facebook, are Ronaldo, who plays for Real Madrid, and you have Lionel Messi.
I don't think Messi has a Twitter.
The two most popular teams that have the most followers on Twitter are Real Madrid and Barcelona.
So
Ronaldo, who has a Twitter, he has, I think, he's the most popular person to follow on Twitter. So, I mean, to your point there,
Look, all the girls follow. I hate the guy, but...
Yeah, right. And
I wish all those ladies were following me. I mean, my Facebook, Twitter account at mtlinares10, just think ladies, follow Victor. What's your Twitter account, Victor?
VJ Corona.
There you go. You want to follow some good-looking cats? I mean, last week we were ugly. This week we'll be good-looking because Cristiano Ronaldo. it's a trending topic.
Right. And I mean, it got crazy, man. Some of the posts on Facebook, man, they were going back and forth. So it gets pretty nasty there. I'm like, really? Like, are you guys really going to cure yourself for some teams
right
now?
Some people would. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go so off because it goes really deep. I mean, soccer is one of the only sports that, stops and creates, in some occasion, not all the time, wars. There's been wars and there's been delays and halts in wars because soccer is a sport that unites countries when people are rooting for the same cause. And that's one of the positive, good things that this sport brings that I could argue no other sport brings. And that's you could look it up, you could search it, and you won't see other sports having that same effect on the planet. But like I told you, I'm very objective. I love all sports. I'm a sports guy. I love everything. If there's one thing I probably hate, let me see.
Unless it's something.
What don't you like?
No, I mean,
a sport that you can't stand watching.
Ah, man. The only thing would be golf. There's some times where, unless Tiger Woods is on there.
I'll tune in on the 17, 18 hole.
Right. Yeah, there's some times where I'm like, really? So I'm just waiting for Tiger Woods to be on there. And that's it. Once he's done, I'm like, okay, that's it for me. But, I mean, I'm not going to say I hate the sport. But, I think the only problem I would have with the whole, with fans out there is the fact that they say, When they talk about, soccer is the greatest sport ever. And I'm like, okay, dude, like, that's your opinion,
Everybody has, have your opinion, and you gotta, some people are out there. And we've talked about this, and we're going to talk about this later on when we talk about boxing and some of the stupidities some of the fans do.
Right.
But before we move on, I want to give this guy credit, all the credit he deserves. He's the European Player of the Year, Mr. Andres Iniesta, Barcelona player mastermind. If you ever want to see a maestro lead an orchestra, I invite you to tune in to see this guy, Andres Iniesta, play. Because when he plays, they call him the puppet master. It's like he's stringing players with the ball. He moves it from side to side, and he just simply starts hypnotizing you. Credit to him, and this is not a favoritism to any team. Real Madrid has equally as great players. So does Man U, Arsenal, and that's one of the beautiful things.
So what happened? Maybe I'm lost here. What happened with Iniesta?
Iniesta, Player of the Year. Let's listen into the bite and see what happened after he won.
For the second year running, an FC Barcelona player has won UEFA's Best Player in Europe award following Lionel Messi's triumph in 2011. Andres Iniesta is the latest star from the Spanish club to lift the coveted trophy. The midfielder was a narrow winner, though, picking up 19 votes from 53 sports journalists representing each of the UEFA member associations. It saw him win the award by only 2 votes, with the defending champion Messi and Real Madrid forward Cristiano Ronaldo tied for second.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to get into that boxing match that's right around the corner and that has everybody talking because there's a lot of things going on. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few minutes.
son diferentes. Simplemente estoy mucho más motivado ahora que nunca. Y quizá ahí radica la ventaja que tengo en comparación con otros combates. La motivación es extrema. Y en ese sentido te digo que cada día estoy metiendo con muchísima más fuerza en mi cuerpo en cada entrenamiento. Y eso que esté, bueno, pues probablemente mucho más cansado también, ¿no? Pero muy satisfecho con mi trabajo. Que tengo el objetivo, que es el más grande de mi carrera, que es triunfar en Las Vegas y recuperar otra vez el cinturón de las 160 libras.
One of the main trending topics right now, because this fight is right around the corner, Las Vegas, the Thomas and Mack Center is going to probably be at full capacity that night, September 15th. Do you still hold your same prediction?
Well, before I get into my prediction, just wanted to let people know that was Sergio Martinez there talking on 24/7, which premiered yesterday.
And great show, by the way.
Right.
Let's give all credit before we get in any kind of trouble.
Right.
24/7 HBO producing one of the best shows that I personally have ever seen.
Right. And they do a great job, you know, with the whole translating and everything. Martinez just talked about how big the fight was for him coming up, his preparation and what he looks to do against Chavez and what Chavez, he's hoping that Chavez is preparing because, you know, he's doing his thing. And
he's going to give it to him. According to Martinez, he's going to knock him out. And we saw and we've seen that Martinez has the ability to knock people out. We saw that with Paul Williams in a second round knockout. It was an amazing power hit. Just put him out. Lights out. Right. Good night, Mr. Paul Williams. Just showing that he is one of the best pound for pounds.
And that's the big reason why I'm going with him. He has the experience over Chavez Jr.
He's much older.
Yeah,
37 years old, very seasoned fighter.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be his biggest fight, not because of the opponent, but because the limelight that he's about to receive.
You say Martinez, I say Chavez Jr., and I'm going to stand my ground. Chavez Jr.
All right, tell me why, though.
This guy has matured from point A to point Z like that in the last 2 years. One of the most, one of the things that I do want to bring up is the fact that, you know, he was called out by, and we talked about this weeks ago when we said that they were going to fight, that Martinez promoter said that on a good given day, Chavez Jr. was not even on the level of Andy Lee. Promoted by the same guy that Martinez is promoted. And he said, before he even fights Martinez, he would have to prove himself to Lee. And we don't think he's even worthy of that. He's not in the top 10. And I disagree with that. And we saw that. It was a beating. And we've seen a mature, a guy who's evolving, a Chavez Jr. who's going to take it. For me, I'm not going to tell you that Chavez Jr. will knock him out. But I think it's going to be close. And a close fight is not good for Martinez.
Well, how much does it, now? Let me defend here, Martinez. How much of it has to do with the fact that he has his name? You know, he has that Chavez name.
The beginning, he probably did. Yeah, obviously, everybody wants to see the son of the legend. You're talking about the greatest Mexican fighter, in my opinion, in the opinion of millions of Mexicans and a lot of experts. Chavez is the greatest fighter. It is a heavy price to carry that name. At the beginning, it might have been an advantage to say, yes, I'm the son of the legend, because it was going to get you fights because of the name you carry. But now it's more like a weight. It's a weight on your shoulders. You got to prove that you're as good as your dad was. And that's kind of hard to win. That's close to impossible. How do you prove? How do you become better than the legend himself?
Yeah, I think we need to listen to this clip of Chavez and him talking about this fight coming up.
Quiero ser el mejor del mundo en mi peso. No hay otra pelea que me interese. No hay otra pelea que quiera y que anhele más.
He wants his fight, and he's basically saying that. He wants the Martinez fight.
Frustrado porque
talking about frustrations.
Si él habla ahorita, mañana a la gente se le olvida. O sea, no puede, o sea, él es, no sé qué pasa, o sea, él pelea y da grandes peleas, pero mañana la gente ya no se acuerda de eso.
He's basically saying,
lo respeto,
I sell
pero
the
es
money.
La realidad.
My name is the one that gets the pay-per-views, not Martinez.
Yeah, and that people can forget about his name as soon as, you know, as soon as he knocks him out, people are going to forget about him.
And he's not lying about that.
Ella pelea por el dinero.
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly, that's a perfect point right there.
Sí que tengo muchas ventajas, pero yo creo que el día 15 se las voy a enseñar.
Wow. Putting it out there. And we saw it yesterday. 24/7. He said it. I'm gonna beat you. You're old. I'm new. I'm still here. You're gonna retire. I'm gonna still be here in the sport once you're done. And we see this. And the thing is that it is. Martinez is trying to make as much money as possible because he doesn't think that Junior is on his level. He doesn't think Junior deserves to even have this fight. That the reason he's having this fight is because he's a Chavez. And that shows that he does want to make the money. And you know that Chavez Jr. is a guy who's going to be supported by a whole country, an entire country. And not only that, because a lot of Latinos support Chavez Jr.
Yeah, and he's the piggy bank. he sees it. I mean, he knows he can get about 3 fights from this if he wants to. Or he can just move on and try to go up against some of the other fighters. But he knows that between Chavez Jr. and Canelo Alvarez, he knows that's where the money is at. Because, you know, you talk to any Latino, you know, and when I'm talking about Latinos, I'm talking about Mexicans, they're the ones that go and support boxing. They're your money ticket right there. And right now...
Well, you have 2 piggy banks right now.
Right.
One's by the name of Chavez Jr., not the senior.
Right.
And another one by the name of Saul Alvarez, who's also a piggy bank.
Right.
And a lot of people want to see these two guys fight because they're both young. This is prime for them. But it's a fight that they don't want to make because you'll break the piggy bank.
Right.
And you're only going to keep half of that money, and you don't. You need to keep making as much money as possible. And that's one of the things that's one of the bad things about boxing nowadays. That it depends who's promoting you, what promotion company do you belong to in order to see big fights.
And I think that's why this, I think, you know, we're talking about how he was looking at the money with Martinez. And in order for him to keep making money, he needs to win this fight. That's why I keep thinking that he's going to be the one that comes out on top. Because if he doesn't, you know, there's more fights for Chavez Jr. You know, he's going to keep making that money. So, and you know what? You know, Sergio, you know, this is you're getting up there. So
Chavez Jr. by decision.
I think, you know, the way I saw him training in that 24/7, you know what, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a knockout by Martinez. I had him going the distance, but...
I'm going to say it is Chavez Jr. by decision because I think Martinez could take a punch, but he is quick. He is very fast. He does have power in those 2 hands, but Chavez Jr. has proven that he can take a punch, which is going to be a... Now we're going to see him take a punch by a superstar. Not on paper, but in the ring, Martinez is one of the best out there in that division, if not the best.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to set up so many things
now. Same day, we have another fight, though.
Yeah.
Josecito Lopez, who defeated Victor Ortiz.
Right.
Is going to fight Canelo Alvarez, the other piggy bank.
Right. And so, you know, this is where it might hurt, you know, those 2 fights is having, you know, 2 popular guys going up at the same time. So,
I don't see Canelo Alvarez giving Chavez Jr. a competition that day. It's hardly even the media coverage is so one-sided right now.
Yeah,
and he's still going to have support because he has a lot of followers, but everybody's been waiting for this Chavez and Martinez fight. It's kind of difficult to compete. I think it was a dumb choice by the people promoting Alvarez. Yeah.
Wow, you just call De La Hoya stupid.
Hey.
And, nah, I mean,
you know what? He has to make his money. De La Hoya is a very...
And I think that's what it was.
That De La Hoya doesn't make those calls. You know, he has people behind him making those calls.
And I think part of the reason it was made, though, was because they wanted to take advantage of the Independence Day, you know, in Latin America.
It's a big day for Mexico and Central America, Latin America.
Right.
We know that people follow that heavily,
right,
and people celebrate that heavily, and that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah, it's gonna be good to you know, see both fights. You know, I don't know how it's gonna work out for people to watch it. You know, if they're gonna be able to watch both fights, but you know what, I think a lot of the fans are gonna be watching Sergio Martinez and Chavez Jr. go at it, And, you know, it, because it's a sexier fight right now.
Let's go to the callers. You're in the sports booth.
Hey, how's it going, Mercer? How's it going, Victor?
Hey, this is Ruben.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Ruben.
Right. Is this the real one?
Yeah, the real one. That's his intro. Bias. That's right.
That's his intro all the time. Is this the real Ruben? Ruben, we're talking about you're calling right in the middle of or actually the end of our conversation of Martinez, Chavez Jr., Canelo Alvarez versus Jose Cito Lopez on September the 15th. What are your predictions that day?
I'm thinking Chavez probably either late round knockout or majority decision.
Ruben's taking it to the next level. I'm saying it's going to be Chavez Jr. by decision. Ruben's predicting a possible late knockout. We know that Chavez Jr. has the power, but can he land those hits on that quick speed that Martinez has?
I'm thinking those body shots are going to keep wearing him down. They're going to wear down Martinez throughout the fight. He's got the pedigree like his father. He's still wearing down opponents. Pressure. He's got the power punches, and I think he can do it and use his size to take advantage of that.
Well, I have a question. One of the things that I was looking at as I was checking out the 24/7 is how good is Chavez's defense? I think that was one of my concerns, and I don't know if you guys can talk about that because I didn't see much. I mean, he's like you were just saying, he's a good at pressuring, but how is his chin? Is he going to be able to hold up, especially if it goes the distance?
I think he's got a great chin. I think he can do it.
I agree with you, Ruben. I think he does have a great chin. But I believe those are some of the things that Freddie Roach has been working with Chavez Jr. on. The fact that he needs to have a better defense because he does take punishment. Andy Lee did. And, you know, he was beating him some in the cards and in the beginning rounds. But the fact that he could take punches saved him. And the fact that he's well-conditioned. And that's one of the things, that's one of his strengths. And one of the things he's been working on for the past 2 years, better conditioning.
I have to agree with that. He walked through those punches, even though Martinez can punch stronger. And he's got his knockout power because he flattened Paul Williams. That was the sensational knockout that he did. And, you know, he's going to watch out for those, like he can take those punches.
So what happens now if what happens? Okay, so we're looking at the fight right now between them two. And I was talking to Moises earlier when we were prepping for the show. Is this guy that fought yesterday, what was his name again, Moises?
Golian, the thing about this fighter is he's a great fighter. He's from Europe.
Right, he fought yesterday. He had a big win yesterday.
They're not popular. None of these fighters are very popular. They're not money makers. And you know that today in boxing, in a sport like boxing, what matters is who could you cash on? Who could you cash in on? And you see that, and that's why you see so many of the same fight. That's why people want to see percentage of people want to see Pacquiao versus Marquez. No, I don't want to see that fight anymore. Right. But the fact that they make so much money is the reason why they even contemplate the idea of a rematch. But each division has great fighters. Just the fact that they're not known. So, you know, nobody's going to buy that pay-per-view.
Right.
Nobody wants to.
So are we looking at a rematch then?
Between
them, let's say
you're talking Martinez,
right?
Chavez
Martinez,
Jr.? Chavez. Oh, definitely. This is the way that I see it. I think that if Chavez wins, he's not gonna want to fight him again if it's a close fight. But if Martinez wins, he would love to give him a rematch because he's on his way out. He needs to stack up his chips. He wants to make as much money now before he retires. That's a fact.
Go ahead, Ruben.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, nobody. You know, I know they were saying, you know, Pacquiao still deciding on when he's going to fight Bamber or whatnot. But I don't know if people aren't going to buy Bradley versus Marquez. I mean, I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to wait on it and watch it. I might go watch it somewhere, but if I'm a regular fan, I'm going to watch it on HBO the following week for free. I'm not going to stay at $50.
That's true. You don't even have to buy a pay-per-view nowadays. You could see it a week after. You can see it online. But real fans do go to these fights. They do support. Cotto's going to be fighting Trout. Trout is a guy who's an upcoming fighter, undefeated. Nobody really knows this guy, but Cotto's going to fight him.
Well, he said that
Cotto has that Puerto Rican fan base. Yeah. They follow him, and he makes money.
Yeah, and the basis of my question to you guys was because then I want to see something where Chavez and Canelo end up fighting, but the way you guys are putting it to me,
it's not going to happen
for 3-4 years
maybe.
Now.
I mean, yeah. I want to see it now. I wanted to see that fight before Martinez, to be honest with you. But Martinez is the guy that everybody dodges. Like in the past, there was fighters that De La Hoya didn't want to fight. Because he knew it was a risk that he could lose, and he's not going to make as much money as he made fighting other fighters that he easily beat because they had a bigger name and they were, you know, on their way out. You saw that with Chavez. He beat a Chavez that was already old, diminished. And who wouldn't? I mean, in my opinion, yes, I want to see an Alvarez Chavez Jr. fight, but remember, they're promoted by two different companies, so that makes it very difficult. These companies want the money. You want 65% for your side and 35% for the other. And when that doesn't happen, obviously you have two big companies that are fighting. They don't want to do 50-50. They want to have the majority.
And this is where the problem comes in with fans.
It's all about money, with boxing.
This is their big problem with it. And, you know, we get back to the UFC where, you know, you have a commissioner with Dana White, you know, running things. And, you know, this is the bad thing. And so, you know, this is where, you know, us talking about this, you know, it makes the sport popular. But at the same time, we kind of get into it and then we see some of the bad things about it. And, you know, this is what turns off some of the fans away.
You know, that's the thing about right now. We're talking about the UFC. But before we go on to that subject, you're listening to www.skidrollstudios.com in the sports booth. With Cecily Nares, Victor Corona, Ruben Arias just joined us. We're talking about boxing. We're going to move on to UFC. And I was telling you this, the ripple effect that the cancellation of UFC 151 had. And that's the thing that was being so highly criticized, the fact that John Jones did not want to fight Chael Sonnen, because that created a ripple effect. It changed so many fights. Now somebody else had to step up, and that guy had to be removed from UFC 153 into 152. And come on, in a sport like mixed martial arts, one man could have that effect, especially the fact that it's John Jones, a champion. He's a superstar right now. So he had the power to say, no, I don't want to do it. And what are you going to do, force him? If he was a smaller guy, a nobody, they would have probably kicked him out.
And you just went right into the big point right there. You know, he's the guy, he's the moneymaker right now. You know, he dictates where
Mayweather
and when
style.
I fight. You know,
there's less in each division in the UFC than in boxing.
Yeah, and he's the most popular guy out there. I mean, you ask people who
promoted by Nike.
Yeah, I mean, you know, his brother's playing in I think in the NFL. He just got drafted. So, I mean, look, the guy, he can dictate right now what he wants to do. He's the one holding the power, and unfortunately, Dana White can't really do. He's gonna have to shuffle things around.
Belfort, who's 21-9, is he stepped up to fight. Well, he's been chosen to fight him in UFC 152 in Toronto. But come on, Belfort, he's a fighter on his way out too. And you have a guy like Chael Sonnen who could, you know, put a whooping on Jones, and they don't want that fight. And sometimes this is the thing, like boxing, where you're making the fights you want to make, not the fights that fans want to see.
Yeah, well, getting back to Sonnen, I mean, if you really think about it, you know, the guy had his shot. He had, you know, Silva there, and he's come the closest to beating Silva. And then in the second one, he got knocked out. And so
Silva's a monster of his own. Man.
Yeah. So I mean, Sonnen, I don't even want to hear from Sonnen. You know, like honestly, like, you know, John Jones.
You wouldn't want to hear from Sonnen when he's offering you all his pocket, all his money,
right,
just to fight him. You're going to give me all your money, and he's one of the highest paid. I think he is the highest paid athlete in the UFC.
Right. If I'm Jones, I choose what I want to do, you know?
You are. You're right. And he did. And that cost a pay-per-view.
Right.
Now, we also have Frankie Edgar, who dropped to featherweight, the 145-pound weight class, to fight Jose Aldo. That's going to be a good fight. If you follow the UFC, that's a fight you have to see. UFC 152. Yeah, that's going to be really good. Now, 153. I'm sorry. 153. I retract that statement. But like I was telling you, the point of this is the fact that there's a ripple.
Right.
One guy has so much power, and sometimes is it good for one man to have so much power?
I think at this point it is. You know what? Especially Jones. You know what? We don't get to see this. I mean, in other leagues, you know, like some of the players, they get their power taken away from them.
But you did mention this last week. You should always have a plan B.
Right.
Two other superstars ready to fight. And yeah. That was a problem. If you have people like Sonny, who's a superstar, willing to fight, then you should have somebody else also willing to fight to save
right
a pay per view.
Yeah. What do you think, Ruben?
I think the Machida fight, that's still a dangerous fight. That's still a good fight. He got a great knockout last month. I mean, he showed he earned a shot there too. I mean, he's always been dangerous his whole career. And see what happens there. Jones, that's
going to
be a little test for him as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. Moving on, let's talk about Major League Baseball really quick. Dodgers bring Bobby Abreu back for the September call-ups. What do you think about that move?
Well, it's pretty much just a left-hander off the bench bat for them, you know, right now. He's not going to be, if they make the playoffs, he's not going to be on the roster. It's just pretty much, you know, having a pinch hitter off the bench later, you know, late in he's kind of like what he did today. I mean, he didn't do anything with it, but... You know, that's pretty much it.
The Dodgers are in a kind of a roller coaster ride right now. Up, down, winning, coming back. Great win today.
Right.
But you're losing to the Arizona Cardinals.
No, Diamondbacks.
I'm sorry about that. The Diamondbacks in a head-to-head competition.
Well, at home, too. I mean... The thing is, right now, I got asked this on Twitter today. One of my friends asked me if the Dodgers have become the Redskins of the NFL. And one of the things you have to keep in mind is the fact that this team has a overhaul roster right now. And so for people to expect them to just gel is kind of, you know, asking for a lot right now. And so they're doing their best. You know, one of the things that I was really encouraged, you know, at least with this series, even though they split four games, is the fact that they're taking quality at bats. The pitching has been, you know,
today we could make that case, but two games ago, I believe it was Thursday versus the Diamondbacks, where Kershaw was pitching and he made one mistake that cost them two runs.
Right.
But other than that, he was solid throughout the game, but there was no production at the bat.
Yeah.
And when you have players like Ethier, like Gonzalez, like Victorino, who are supposed to produce, it hurts the team. And you're at the point of the season where you have to start making an impact. You have to rally those wins in order to make it. They're half a game behind the wild card.
And they're pressing. And that was one of the things that I saw like during the Colorado series early in the week and then at the beginning of this series is those players were pressing. And I think... something happened where I saw Matt Kemp finally back on Twitter, and I was talking about it on Twitter, too. He needs to relax. He needs to be that fun guy again because he's a leader. You know, some of the other players might be having better years than him, but he's a leader of that team. And as they go, he's the key guy.
Josh Beckett earned his first win. That's good news for him. Ruben, what do you think about that? Do you see a solid... The ace, you know, we know Kershaw's the ace, but now we have Kershaw, Beckett, Billingsley. How does that for you go into a possible playoff scenario?
I think that you gotta feel good about that rotation right there, and Beckett will bring it. I mean, you brought him there for those playoff games, you know. So he got rocked by the Rockies two weeks ago, but shake that off, get his footing in the National League, and get it together. And you brought him here for the playoffs to help out. He helped Boston win the title, and that's what you brought him here for, to help out in the postseason.
The Angels are eight games behind. It's starting to seem as if the end is near for them, the end of the season, that is, because it doesn't seem they're putting it together. You're behind the Oakland A's. You're behind an unknown
Orioles.
Oakland A's.
Right.
And the Texas Rangers are simply just...
Yeah, they're out of the division. For the division, they're out.
That's failure.
Right, but you still have a chance to get into the wild card. They're about four games out, and they have, I think, 6 to 9 games against the A's coming up where they can make that ground up.
Those are going to be
huge.
Crucial.
Right. And
huge,
so
crucial games they have to win. They have to win that series
I think
somehow.
Their season comes down to their series against the A's. And look at what we have now. If we as Southern California fans with the Dodgers and the Angels, we're both going to be looking at games against the Giants. If you're a Dodger fan and if you're an Angel fan, you're looking at the Oakland. So, I mean, it's going to come down to that. And so, you know, what more can you ask for? At least you have, you know, interesting games heading into September.
The National, and you know, the thing is that time is ticking.
Yeah.
You don't have time to keep planning and saying, you know what, we're going to change this and that. No, it's either you get it together now or you kiss the season goodbye. The Nationals, we don't have a lot of time, but we know that the Strasburg countdown has officially begun. It's close to the end.
Yeah, they announced today that they're shutting them down on the 12th.
Wow.
So
huge.
You know what? And that's big for the Dodgers too, because they're facing them on the 19th around that time. So they won't have to face them. So that's big for the
Dodgers
too.
Guys, you're contenders this season for to be in the World Series at least. Don't give me a winner. Just give me two teams that you think are going to be there.
For who? From
both. Doesn't matter, from the American and National League.
I think one of them is the Reds from the National League, and I think from the American, I think, I hate to say this, but the Orioles.
Ooh. Ruben, really quick. We have a few seconds left.
Dodgers, Yankees,
wow. I would love to see that. You know what? I'm getting text messages because I said Arizona Cardinals. I'm sorry about that. I will make that mistake next week. That's all the time we have. This is In the Sports Booth. See you guys next week.
Take care.